Roundtable Podcasts, underwritten by Proctors, the Capital Region's premier performing arts center featuring the best in entertainment from Broadway and around the globe. Proctors.org.
Phantom limbs, people who see through their tongues or taste colors, diseases that make people believe their spouses are imposters or render them unable to recognize vegetables. Do we ever tire of hearing these remarkable stories about the human brain? In his new book, The Tale of the Dueling Neurosurgeons, the history of the human brain is revealed by true stories of trauma, madness, and recovery. Bestselling author Sam Keen describes some of history's most unbelievable, bizarre yet true brain injuries and accidents, illustrating in crystal clear prose how our brains really work. Sam Keen is the author of the New York Times bestsellers The Disappearing Spoon and The Violinist's Thumb. Again, the title of the new book is The Tale of the Dueling Neurosurgeons. It's a great pleasure to welcome Sam Keen back to the roundtable. Thank you very much for being with us. I appreciate it.
Hi, thanks for having me back.
So what brought you to the history of the human brain?
Well, basically, I was reading a story a few years ago about someone who suffered a brain injury. And frankly, I just did not believe what I was reading. I thought that the author was mistaken or pulling my leg. I thought something about it just sounded too strange to possibly be true. The story was about someone who got injured in their temporal lobe on the side of the brain. And all of a sudden, this person couldn't recognize animals anymore. Plants they could tell apart just fine, you know, faces, human-made objects, all of that stuff was okay. But suddenly, you know, dogs, cats, elephants all looked exactly the same to them. They could not tell these creatures apart. And I just did not think that that could possibly be true. It sounded too outlandish. But then I looked into it and realized that, oh, wow, this does happen to people. This is a true story. And I realized, actually, that, you know, it sort of provided a unique insight into how the brain worked. This one little spot got injured, and all of a sudden, you can talk about this circuit in the brain that specializes in recognizing animals. And I kind of realized that, oh boy, I bet you could write a whole book about how the brain works just based on different injuries that cause people's minds to change in unusual and strange ways. So that was kind of the inspiration for the book.
I think you point out in the book that it became a situation of trying to figure out what stories to tell, in the sense that there's a lot of fodder there.
Yeah, pretty much any part of the brain, if something, you know, injures it or it goes down, it short circuits somehow, your mind will change in some way. So it was a matter of just selecting, you know, the best, the most interesting stories and kind of marching around the brain from part to part and figuring out what every single part of the brain does based on stories of it going down.
There are incredible characters in the book, and many, many incredible characters. Tell us about James Holman.
Yeah, in the book, I really wanted to emphasize the stories of these people's lives, and James Holman was one of the favorites. He was alive around, you know, about 1810, 1815, somewhere around there, and he was the most prolific traveler the world had ever known. He traveled something like 250,000 miles at the time, which was incredible. That's basically like taking a trip to the moon, which back then was unheard of. But incredibly, he did all of that while he was blind. He could not see anything because of a disease that he fought. What he learned to do, basically, was take his cane and he would click it on the surface of the ground and create echoes. And from those echoes, he could figure out what was in front of him, sort of like the way a bat navigates. The basic lesson of the story was that he basically learned how to retrain his brain. And if you look at brain scans of people doing similar things today, and there are people out there who can sort of see in the same way, you notice that the vision parts of their brain are actually lighting up while they do this. So he basically retrained his brain to use hearing as a form of second sight, and again, became the most prolific traveler the world has ever seen.
Who were the dueling neurosurgeons of the title?
So there were a couple of surgeons named Andreas Vesalius and Ambrose Paré, and they were active in Europe in about the 1500s or so, the very early days of neuroscience. And the king of France, Henry II, ended up getting injured in a jousting accident. He basically got clobbered in the face with a lance during a tournament. And, of course, they wanted the best neurosurgeons in Europe to come tend to him, so they brought in Vesalius and Paré. The interesting thing about the case, I think, is that they diagnosed him with a concussion, which at the time was a very controversial, a very unusual diagnosis, because there were really no external signs of damage. It's not like his head was split open or he had a fracture in his skull. It was all internal damage, and not a lot of people believed that concussions could really harm you at the time. So you go, sort of get to see neuroscience at its birth, but it also, of course, is relevant today because we're still dealing with a lot of these issues. You hear about professional football players and even younger football players suffering from concussions. You hear about soldiers suffering low-level brain damage, even though there's no external signs of damage. So we're still dealing with a lot of these same issues that they were wrestling with 500 years ago. So that's why it sort of became the title, because it shows the beginnings of neuroscience and still how all of these stories are relevant today.
Relevant because you can't look at it all as just one-offs, that it isn't just one isolated thing or one isolated area of the brain, but ultimately we are talking about an interconnected system.
Yeah, that's one of the things I really feel like I learned about when I was writing the book. You know, shorthand, sometimes we talk about a language spot in the brain or a part of the brain that controls memory. But when you look at how the brain works, it's really large systems of things, many, many parts of the brain all working together to give you some sort of complicated faculty or talent. So that was one of the real lessons of the book, is that, you know, you can't look at any part of the brain in isolation. You have to look at how memory works with language, how they both work with emotion, all of those things coming together.
I mean, because it's fascinating just to think when it comes to the brain of how we see. I mean, that's very complex to boil that down.
Yeah, we have the vision part of your brain is usually in the back of the brain. It's called the occipital lobe. And that's the part that kind of controls conscious vision. So what you know that you're aware of. In the book, I talk about how you recognize things, how you recognize faces, how you tell one face from the other, all of these little details about it. What I really found fascinating, too, was the idea that there's our conscious brain, the parts that we're aware of, but there's also a lot of unconscious things going on. You can even get into some of that with vision research. One of my favorite stories from the book was people whose eyes still worked, so their eyes could still take in light, but somewhere in the conscious part of the brain, the vision part was damaged. They couldn't consciously see anything around them. But the eyes send information to more than just the conscious parts of the brain. They also send information to unconscious parts of the brain. So these people, even though they were blind, would still respond automatically to other people smiling at them. They would smile back. If someone yawned in front of them, they might catch the yawn from the other person. So there's a lot of really incredible stories about the unconscious brain sort of bubbling up in these unusual circumstances like that.
The vision part is amazing. So is language, another incredible system that we have in our brain.
Yeah, again, I go into a lot of detail about how the language system works, you know, how we form words, how they're linked with memories, things like that. One of my favorite aspects of the book was talking about people who lose the ability to speak. I'm sure we've all heard of that, you know, a stroke victim or something like that who struggles to find words. But I didn't realize how rich it was and how many different ways language can kind of go kaput. There are people who lose, you know, a second language, but they don't lose their first language. There are people who aren't able to talk anymore, but they can still sing just fine, or they can still swear at you if you get them provoked. So there are a lot of subtle ways that language gets damaged in the brain. It's not just one tiny spot that gets damaged and language goes away. There's a lot of richness there.
One of the things that I found really interesting in the book is ultimately, with each of these cases and each of these stories, we learn a little more, but ultimately there's so much more to learn.
Yeah, it's one of those things where the more you know, the more you realize that there's a lot of work left. You realize what you don't know. And neuroscientists have made incredible progress in a lot of cases based on not only how these people get injured, but how they recover from their injuries, how they compensate, you know, sort of their resiliency. But the more they looked, the more they realized that some of the really hard problems, like consciousness, were just getting into those right now. So in the book, I talk a little bit about where we're at with those things and where we need to go in the future.
How do you think this fits into ultimately the subjects that you write about? So much about science. How does this fit in?
Well, you know, I think the brain is one of the real frontiers out there. It's something that we know a fair amount about on a certain level, kind of a low level, but it's really interesting to think about how that kind of scales up. So how we go from neurotransmitters, chemicals like dopamine or serotonin, and go all the way up to something really complicated like consciousness. We still have a lot of work to do sort of figuring out how that scale or how we can ascend that scale. The other interesting thing, I think, is that neuroscience stories probably mean more to neuroscience than any other scientific field out there, because you're dealing with people during their daily lives. You're talking about how they experience the world, how they experience emotions like love or anger, how they see things, how we speak, how that unconscious influences control our thoughts. So it's really, really a rich, rich field. You know, there's a lot of really basic science you can do if you want to do that, but you can quickly scale up and get into all sorts of incredible stories about, you know, people's lives changing in an instant.
Sam Keen's new book is The Tale of the Dueling Neurosurgeons, The History of the Human Brain as Revealed by True Stories of Trauma, Madness, and Recovery. It is published by Little Brown. Sam Keen, thank you very much for sharing with us. I appreciate it. Best of luck with the book.
All right. Thank you for having me.
Thank you very much. Again, the title of the book is The Tale of the Dueling Neurosurgeons. It's published by Little Brown. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.